All right. So this week's Parsha is Parshat Emor. Emor, we're working our way through the book of Vayikra, through the book of Leviticus, and we're working towards the end. This is a single Parsha. I know we haven't had that in a while, which is kind of nice, that we have Parshat Emor. As with most Parshiot, this is an action-packed lot to cover. But for this week, I wanted to focus on the festivals. Towards the end of the Parsha, the Torah lists the information regarding all of the festivals, from Pesach, counting the Omer, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, all of them. However, the Torah begins, chapter 23, as follows. These are the appointed festivals. Sorry, I skipped. Hashem spoke to Moses saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, Hashem's appointed festivals that you are to designate as holy convocations, these are my appointed festivals." All right, the introduction. I'm going to list for you all of the holidays. "For 6 days, labor may be done, and the seventh day is a day of complete rest, the holy convocation. You shall not do any work. It is a Sabbath for Hashem in all your dwelling places." As I mentioned last night, you don't need to know from information from last night, is that we find that very perplexing. The listing of festivals and holidays, I would not have expected to find Shabbat at the top of the list. I grew up thinking that there were two major aspects of celebrating on the Jewish calendar. One was Shabbat, that came around every week. And then there's another category called holidays and festivals, and that came around at various times throughout the year. But I never even would have dreamed of putting Shabbat in the list of festivals. Yet the Torah not only places it in there, it starts with it. And only after mentioning Shabbat does it move to the holiday of Pesach and onwards. This is not my question. This is a question that most commentators deal with, and they quote early sources. If you look at Rashi, right there on the verse, Rashi gives us an illuminating comment, but as is often the case, the comment, while profound, begs further questions to really understand what it is that Rashi is saying. Rashi quotes and says the following. "Ma inyan Shabbat etzel moadot." Why is Shabbos mentioned amongst all of the festivals? "Lilamdecha." It's coming to teach us. "Shekol ha-mechalel et ha-moadot, malin alav ki'ilu chilel et ha-shabbatot." Whoever desecrates the festivals, it's as if they have desecrated the Shabbat. "V'chol ha-mekim et ha-moadot." And if somebody establishes and affirms the festivals, it's as if you established and made firm Shabbos. Basically, Rashi is saying that the Torah here wants to tell us that the severity of observing the festivals should be equated with the severity of keeping Shabbat. The Torah doesn't need to elaborate on the importance of Shabbat. It's one of the Ten Commandments. It's up there, right? Comes along the Torah and says, I'm putting Shabbat in the list to make sure you understand that the festivals are not a distant second runner-up kind of observance. It's up there on the same level as Shabbos. One who observes the festivals, it's as if you observe Shabbat. It's on that level, and vice versa, the other way around. If we want to live on the superficial level, we can leave it at that. But I think a thinking person would delve a little bit deeper and ask a very simple question. It's a nice concept to equate them, but they're not the same. As we've said numerous times, Shabbat is a weekly event that represents a very profound concept that we reaffirm every single week. And the festivals, they're important, but they're commemorations of historical events. that we try to relate and try to bring down in relevance to our day and age. But to equate them? I don't know. What exactly is the Torah trying to teach us by equating them? So this is a starting point. There was a great rabbi who passed away in the mid-1980s, Rav Moshe Feinstein. Many of you may have even heard his name. I regret I had opportunities in my life of where I could have met him, even on somewhat of a regular basis. My mother's brother, my uncle, was basically his right-hand man. Great sage, great rabbi in his own right. He had access to Rav Moshe Feinstein on a regular basis. And as a young kid, I just like, oh, okay, cool. And I just moved on. I blew so many great opportunities to really get to know this great giant of a man. I say that tongue in cheek because he was extremely short. So, but he was a giant of a man as far as Torah scholarship and leadership around the world. Anyway, in his commentary on the Torah, he asks this question. He wants to delve a little deeper as to what is it that Rashi, quoting the source, is trying to tell us about Shabbos being equated with the festivals. What he says is as follows. Let's take a step back for a moment. What is it, if you were to ask somebody, what is the reason that the Torah gives for us to commemorate and observe Shabbat? I think most people would say, because it's parallel to what God did when he created the universe. God, quote unquote, worked for 6 days, created our universe in 6 days, and quote unquote, rested on the seventh. We do the same. We are creative. We go ahead and accomplish and use various activities and labors to make our world a better place. But on Shabbat, we hand the reins back over to God and quote unquote, we rest as well. And it would be 100% true. That is what the Torah states in the Ten Commandments. Well, at least in the first version of the Ten Commandments. You're familiar that the Torah actually has it listed twice in the Torah. However, if you look at the second time Shabbat is mentioned, it gives a different reason. But let's appreciate what it is first. What is the holiday? Well, let me say it differently. One of the most important principles of Judaism is our belief that God is not just a creator, but he's also actively involved even to this day. There are certain religions that want to profess that their knowledge of God is that God, there is some supreme being that brought the world into existence, but now the laws of nature, it's running its own course. God does not interfere. God does not get involved in human affairs anymore. There are such religions that believe that. That is not Judaism. Judaism makes it very clear that we believe that God both is a bore, he's a creator. In fact, that's the opening sentence of our Torah. Bereshit, in the beginning, bara Elokim, God created. So we refer to God as the creator of our universe, and that's what Shabbat represents. However, where it became crystal clear that God, from our perspective, did not just abandon the world after he created it, but stays actively involved, has providence over the affairs of man, is the fact that God took us out of Egypt. It was the pivotal, perhaps the seminal event in Jewish history that indicated that God is involved. You think water is water? Watch, I will turn water to blood. I can go ahead and have wild animals and tell them to only go in certain parts of Egypt, but stay away from where the Jews were living in the city of Goshen. Well, wild animals go wherever they want. No, not when the master of the universe tells them they only go here. I will have all the other plagues. I can split the sea against its natural order. Every event regarding the Exodus from Egypt was bringing home the message that I am master of the universe, not just as a creator, but actively involved. I can go ahead and change nature if I desire to do that. Judaism is telling us that you cannot have faith, true faith in one without the other. You would be lacking in your faith if you believe that there is a God who created a universe and then stopped short and didn't incorporate the belief that he's still actively involved in worldly affairs. You would be doing a disservice in your faith. Rav Moshe wants to suggest, Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests, that that's what the Torah here, and that's what Rashi wants to impress on us. That don't think for a minute that one's observance of Shabbat is on that level, and the observance of the festivals, which are commemoration of God actively involved in the world, well, that's only on a minor level. No, 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 no. We equate them. One who observes the festivals, it's as if he observes Shabbat. Why? Because they're two parts of one whole. The part that says, I believe God created the universe, is Shabbat. And the part that tells us, that reinforces our belief that God is actively involved, is the observance of the festivals. And therefore, one who observes one, considering the festivals, it's connected to the observance of Shabbat. And therefore, the desecration of the festivals is also a desecration of Shabbat. The two go hand in hand. Bore and manhig. Those are the two words that we use on a regular basis to describe these two aspects. Bore means creator, like you pick up your cup of wine Friday night for Kiddush, or anytime you have a cup of wine or grape juice and you make a bracha and you say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Bore Peri HaGafen. Bore means who creates. We refer to God as a Bore, creator. But don't stop short, because there's the other aspect of the fact that he's also manhig. He gives guidance, leads. That's the two aspects. That's how Rav Moshe wants to suggest the two work hand in hand. I start with this because for the remainder of the class, we're going to go in an extremely different direction. Very different direction. Just in time to welcome those who are coming. It's a good point. Great point of where we're going to try to understand Shabbat vis-a-vis the festivals. Let's explore it this way. The Meshech Chachma. I'm throwing a lot of names at you tonight because I want you to become familiar. It's on my curriculum list of one of the things I want to accomplish with our group. And that is to familiarize you with some of the names, the movers and shakers of Jewish Torah literature. So there was a man by the name of Rav Meir Simcha. He lived in the city of Dvinsk. Rav Meir Simcha. He wrote a commentary, a tremendous scholar. His commentary on the Chumash, on the Torah, incorporates the following idea. He says like this. He says, if you look, you can divide all of the mitzvot in the Torah into those that are helping us solidify and nurture the relationship we have with God. And there are other mitzvot whose performance is there to help us build and strengthen the bond with each other. What we would call Bein Adam Lamakom, between man and God. And then there are other mitzvot that are Bein Adam Lachavero, between man and his fellow. Interpersonal relationships. Well, he says something really interesting. He's bothered. Let's look at it from a purely halachic, from a Jewish law perspective. How are the laws regarding work, and again, I use the word in quotes, what is not allowed to be done on Shabbat and what is not allowed to be done on Yom Tov, on the festivals? Are they the same? Before you jump, the Torah does say, you shall not do melacha on Shabbat, and you find the exact same almost almost exact same expression for the observance of the festivals. We're not supposed to do certain activities. But are they exactly the same? So, Michelle, you shook your head no. Why? You're on mute.
Because on Shabbos, the laws are more restrictive. And on holidays, especially the ones that are longer, there are, I don't know what the word is, but primary parts of the holiday, and then the middle days where you can do more things.
But how about on the festival day itself, the holidays, the primary day? Can anyone give me an example of where there's a difference in what is allowed or is not allowed on Shabbos versus the holiday? Sharon?
There's some cooking laws. How you can cook, or that you can warm things up on Yontif where you can't on Shabbat.
Okay, very good. One major difference is exactly like Sharon said regarding the laws of cooking. Let's say I'm in the mood Shabbat morning. I want a fresh scrambled egg. Can I go ahead and cook an egg Shabbat morning? The answer is absolutely, positively, no. I may not do that. If I wake up festival holiday morning, the morning, Passover morning, Sukkot morning, Rosh Hashanah morning, not a good example. Well, maybe. Other festivals, can I get on and say, you know, I'm in the mood for a freshly scrambled egg. Can I cook a egg Yom Tov morning? The answer is yes. One little side point, you can't start the fire. You have to have the flame on already, but that's technical, not going there. My point is exactly what Sharon says, is that you are allowed to cook on the festival for the festival needs. I can't say, oh good, I'm off. I'm not going to shul this morning. I'm going to stock my freezer because I'm going on vacation in 6 weeks. Can't do that. It has to be for the festival need. So if you're in the mood for that day, you want to cook your roast for your dinner that night, you want to cook your whatever chicken, you can do that on Yom Tov. You cannot do that on Shabbat. That is one major difference. Here's another one. Do I need, you know, one of the 39 categories of forbidden work on Shabbat is carrying. For me to take something on me, in my hand, in my pocket, for me to carry something from my home, which is a private domain, out into the public domain. I'm not allowed to do that on Shabbat unless, and this is what most of you are familiar with, unless there's something, great thing called an Eruv, which is basically, there's long and short of it, if you don't know what it is, it basically is a mechanism that incorporates the whole area and makes it one domain. The same way I can carry something from my kitchen into my dining room, or from my dining room into my bedroom, and I haven't violated anything, even though I'm carrying it, you're allowed to stay within one domain and carry all you want. The only problem is when you go from one domain to a different one, from the private out into the public or vice versa. That is true only on Shabbat. On Yom Tov, I don't need an Eruv. I can go ahead and carry out from the private out into the public, from the public into the private. No Eruv needed. That's a big difference. Shabbat, as Michelle, you pointed out, is more restrictive. The Meshech Chachma of Meir Tzimcha is bothered. If the Torah says that all activities are forbidden, except for a few on Yom Tov that are permitted, then there must be something intrinsically different Shabbat than the Yom Tov. Because The Torah doesn't randomly say, you know, you worked hard enough, fine, we'll let this one go. That's not the Torah philosophy. It's, if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. So if there is a difference, a real, I think, essential difference, then it must be reflected in the essential nature of each one of those days. And that's what he grapples with. And what he says is as follows. So beautiful. What is the function of Shabbat? And what is the function of Yom Tov, of the holidays? He wants to suggest, I don't think that this is the normal understanding, mainstream understanding, but it really, it struck a chord with me. Before I give you the punchline, which of the two, Shabbat or Yom Tov, do you think is more conducive to have company and guests to share your day with? Shabbat or Yom Tov? Which do you think fits better? It's not a simple question.
They both actually are good for having company.
Good.
But on Shabbat, you're supposed to invite people into your home to share Shabbat with you.
And not for Yom Tov?
You are for Yom Tov, but I think it's probably more important on Shabbat.
Okay. What do others think? You're welcome to agree. Nothing wrong with agreeing with Marcia. I recommend it highly.
I would agree.
Unless she's wrong.
She's never wrong.
We agree.
Is there another perspective?
I disagree.
Why? Because Marcia said it.
No, because I think the original concept statement was Shabbat was in regard to relationship between God and man. And whereas the festivals and the holidays are in regard to the relationship with other people.
Why? Why is that? You're saying something really good, John, but let's try to understand why.
Because in Passover, it talks about letting the stranger in to be able to partake of the commandments that God asked for, told us about the Paschal Lamb, the bitter herbs, and
So Elian has an interesting twist. I'm gonna leave yours till I develop one more piece, and then I'll come back to it because I think you have to appreciate something about it. Let me go back to John for a second. See, Marcia, I intuitively agree with you. And it's true. We make a big deal about having company and so that people can experience the beauty of Shabbat. And I don't disagree with that at all. However, the Meshech Chacham, Rav Meir Simcha, is bothered. The laws of Shabbat seem almost to the point of where it's not going to work. Let's go back to the concept of you can't cook. You can't cook on Shabbat. So let's turn the clock back, 100 years, 150, 200 years. We don't have refrigeration. We don't have the same kinds of luxuries that we have in our day and age. Let's get rid of the convention called an Eruv. How are we going to celebrate Shabbat? I'm going to do all my cooking on Friday, right? And then what?
Prayers. And
right, I'm going to do my prayers, right? Definitely.
Candles, drinking wine, remembering it as the day that God finished creating the earth.
100%. But let me ask you, let's say your neighbor, you want to invite her, you want to invite him to come for the meal. What's he or she going to bring?
Nothing. Nothing.
Oh,
Manischewitz wine.
Can't carry. Remember?
Can't carry.
You can't carry. So there goes your potluck dinner. Oh, there goes that idea. Everybody bring their own. That's out. Not only that, you can't not only carry, but you can't cook. You know, oh my gosh, somebody just dropped in. because, you know, we invited people to come, so they brought, right? Oh, no. Yeah. What are you going to do now? What? Pull out another one from the freezer and warm it up? Can't do that. It's Shabbos. You can't do it. Rav Meir Simcha says, it seems as though the thrust of Shabbat is not getting together with all of your friends and getting together with company. It's all about your relationship with God. It's almost as if God is purposely putting up restrictions so that you stay put. Don't go visiting your friends because you can't carry. You're not even supposed to go too far traveling by foot on Shabbat. You have a million different pieces that are screaming, stay where you are. Stay. Yom Tov. What did we do, by the way? Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot, three times a year. What did we do when we had the temple?
We traveled to Jerusalem.
Yeah, we all went. That's where you ran into your third cousin, Jack. You only see him three times a year. Oh my God, Jack, it's so great to see you. All year long, you don't see him because he lives in Tveria and you're in Beersheba. Forget it. Who's got time for this? Three times a year, you meet your first cousin also. You meet your neighbors. We come together as a people, as a nation, and we celebrate together. Rav Meshe Chachma wants to suggest that those mitzvot that are there to enhance and to nurture the relationship between the Jewish people and God, that's symbolized by Shabbat. And that's why the Torah says, don't go leaving your home, don't carry, you can't cook anything extra. This is our time. Yom Tov, the festivals, go ahead. An extra guest come, no problem. Whip up some more eggs, no problem. Throw another chicken on the grill, we're good. Go ahead, come on in. Let's do this together. He says that essentially the two go together, meaning where Shabbat is to enhance your relationship with God is equivalent and not to be separated from Yom Tov, that's there to celebrate and nurture your relationship with others. That's why you can carry. That's why you can go out. That's why you can cook, because it is much more conducive to getting together. That's what he wants to suggest. Now,
but we have moved somewhat towards with the Eruv and things like that to making Shabbat be someplace where we do let people in. I mean, when I was
I'm not against it, and I don't think the Meshach
our days, that was sort of the main part of it.
Correct. I'm not suggesting in practical terms that from here on out we only have company three times a year. That's not what I'm suggesting. But what I'm trying to do is to enlighten you and ask the really hard question of, even though we have things in place now that have basically, I don't know, we've removed some of the concept of the difference, the contrast, why did the Torah create it this way? Because the essential natures are different. Now, okay, in today's day and age, like many other things, we're hanging on to survive. We're hanging on. So yeah, if there's a mechanism by which we could have people, fine. But don't lose sight that your Shabbat is not about always connecting with your neighbor. It's maybe having your neighbor come so that collectively we can connect with God. Don't lose that picture, that piece of the picture. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But let's go back to something you said earlier, because you mentioned about the holiday of Pesach. Here's what's really, really interesting. What were the basic laws regarding that first Paschal lamb that we were commanded to bring right before we left, the day before? What were the basic laws? Each family was supposed to take a sheep a few days earlier, right? And get ready so that what we now call Erev Pesach, the day before, What did you do? You slaughtered it.
Slaughtered it and offered it.
Good. You slaughtered it. You roasted it.
And you were supposed to eat the whole thing.
Good. And therefore, you were going to incorporate some of your neighbors. Because now it's true, probably in the Tuchman household, we probably wouldn't invite anybody because we're serious carnivores. And we probably would finish it all by ourselves. You know, that's the way it goes.
Don't forget the doorpost.
Yeah, put the door blood on the doorpost. All great. But wasn't there also a commandment that they were not allowed to leave their homes that night? Ah, interesting.
So wait a second.
Whoa, no, you wait. Listen to this. Listen to this. Wait, wait. The parallels. You must prepare before the holiday. You got to stay in your home. You can't go out. And the kicker is that when the next day, when the Torah tells us that on the second day of Pesach, we begin to start counting the days between Passover and Shavuot, we start counting the Omer, for what seems to be an unexplained reason, the Torah says, Usfartem lochem, and you shall count for yourselves, mimacharat, from the day after, you know what the next word is? Not Yom Tov, not
Shabbat. Shabbat.
Shabbos. The Torah uses the word Shabbat to mean the holiday of Pesach. Not once, twice. It says, and you shall count for yourselves the day after Shabbat. And then at the end, when it says, how long should you count? You count ad mimachrat ha-Shabbat ha-Shvi'it. Until you count the day after the seventh week. And it calls it Shabbat. Whoa, I thought we're talking about Passover. Why all of a sudden you're starting to use the word Shabbat here? Now, mind you, the Karaites, which are a sect in of Jews who broke away from tradition and they did not accept any of the understandings of the oral tradition, and they took the biblical verses literally, they would arrange their calendar and never start counting the Omer until Sunday, regardless of when Passover fell. Why? Because the verse literally means the day after Shabbat. So they always started counting on a Sunday. We don't do that. We start counting whatever the second day of Passover is. Because we have the oral tradition as to why, what it means. Okay? For example, just one second, we'll come back to this. The Karaites, they would, like I said, they took everything literally. For example, they did not wear tzitzit. They didn't wear the tzitzit. Why? Because the verse says you should see them and remember them. So what did they do? They hung it on the wall. Now you're laughing, but that's what they did. They would wear tefillin, the head tefillin, here. Because the literal translation says you shall bind it on your arm and wear it as a sign between your eyes. Mm-hmm. Our oral tradition teaches us that it's on the head, centered between the eyes, but not down here. If you're wearing your tefillin down here on your forehead, you're making a mistake. But that's how the Karaites lived. So therefore, they took this verse literally. It always has to start count on the day after Shabbat. That's not our understanding. But listen to what's going on here. The Pesach that they dealt with in Egypt, that very first one, sounds very similar to Shabbat. You must prepare ahead of time. You can't leave your home. I mean, this is Shabbos 101. Yeah. And that's why the Torah says, in this regard, in that one first time, that first year, it referenced Pesach by the name Shabbat, because it had that parallel. Elian, your point is well taken. And that is past the first time, then for sure it was all about getting together in groups, working together, large groups, traveling to Jerusalem. That's what it's all about, 100%. But this is the general idea that the Meshech Chachma wants to suggest is the essential difference between Shabbat, which is a focus on a mitzvah, nurturing your relationship with God, and of the festivals, which is more focused on nurturing your relationship with your fellow. That's how he understands it. I thought it was a very, very, very nice understanding. Sharon, you had a question.
I may have just misunderstood you, but when you were talking about the first Pesach and, you know, what they had to do with the lamb and all that, and you were talking about Shabbat, which you explained a little bit better now, but also starting to count the Omer, they didn't know from that. I mean, what were they counting? They didn't, it wasn't like now we know, oh, okay, we're counting because they we're going
to. You're right. That command of starting to count wasn't then. But okay. When the Torah, in the listing of all the things we do festival-wise, and it tells us about counting in that command, wasn't that first day.
Okay.
But the connection from Passover to Shavuot says to count the days. It says to count the day starting the day after Shabbat, which in this case means the first day of Pesach. Okay. You with me? Wait, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to make sure. So the first Pesach was like Shabbat because it was the relationship with God as well as with people. And then it branched out. I mean, because remember you were saying the festivals were really more for relationship with people, Shabbat, more of God. But this one was the same, the first one.
The first one was Shabbat. It wasn't about getting together with people.
Okay, it was just purely about relationship with God.
It was really focused more like Shabbat on solidifying our belief that God is going to take us out. That God is that's the central focus of the first Pesach in Egypt. Gotcha. From that point onwards, Pesach is no different than all the other festivals where the focus is more on the nurturing the relationship between each other.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Two other points, two other ideas related to Shabbat vis-a-vis the festivals. At the end of our Kiddush Friday night, towards the end, we quote from the verse where it talks about God finished his work. He rested. We use the words Shavat Vayinafash, right? As Rabbi Kosman would sing, Shavat Vayinafash, right? Okay. What does the word Shavat mean? Shavat means resting. But what is the word Vayinafash? It's such a funny word. It's not clear. Most of the time it's translated as some kind of you're refreshed, some kind of, you know, after you rest, you get an exhilaration of some sort. The Talmud actually breaks down the word vayinafash into two words. The first word is vay, as in oivay, oivay. Vay, nefesh. Oi, oi. What's going to be with the soul? Why? Because the Talmud tells us that we are given an extra soul on Shabbat. Now, what exactly that means, again, the commentators have a lot. Some say it's an enhanced capacity to have a sense of serenity and rest and joy. Others learn that it's a matter of an extra measure of divine sensitivity that enables one to learn Torah better, to connect with God on a higher level. It's something in the spiritual hibby-jibby stuff, right? But you get that extra measure of it on Shabbat. And when Shabbat leaves, it was so good while it lasted. And you feel a certain downer. So much so, you all laughing, but you all know this. Why? Because one of the things we do as part of the Havdalah service, as we escort the Shabbat away, right, is we smell spices, right? In certain states, they're smelling other stuff, but it's spices, okay? We have to use spices. Why? Why are we smelling spices? So the Talmud says, what?
To reawaken.
Wait, no, it's something
sweet.
Fell
asleep?
Something sweet, so you're not that upset.
Eat a candy. What is smelling spices? that gets you going. Listen, I don't know, whatever floats your boat, folks. That doesn't work for me. Smelling some cloves doesn't get me joust in the morning. Fresh a cup of coffee. Now we're talking.
Is it to engage a different sense in order to help Shabbos linger?
Okay. Yes, that is true. Very true. How do we do this? Let me give the answer and then I'll come back to you, Liz. Okay. The answer is that feeling of loss of spirituality, we want to give a boost to our spiritual side. Why is it specifically through the organ or through the sense of smell? Why don't we eat something? Why specifically smell? So I'll just because the time is short, I'll give you a quick primer. We have five senses. Okay, that's it. No, we have five senses, and of the five, your sense of smell is the most spiritual of the five physical senses. I'll prove it to you. When I have in front of me a freshly baked cake, I can see it, I can touch it, I can smell it, I can hear the sizzle, and I can taste it. If I then take that cake out of the room, just into the other room, behind the door, I can no longer see it, I can no longer taste it, I can no longer touch it, and I can no longer hear the sizzle, but boy, I can still smell it. I can still smell that. Because it still lingers, and that, Liz, that was the perfect word. It lingers because it is the most everlasting of the senses. It is the most spiritual of the five. I'm going to throw it out there, research it as much as you want, but it's fascinating. When you look at the sin in the Garden of Eden, it makes reference to four of the five senses that were used in the sin. Chava, Eve told Adam, he ate from it. She reached up to grab it. She saw that it was pleasant. Where are they, by the way? They're in the blank of Eden. Where are they?
Garden.
Don't you think there would be at least one verse, one piece of information of how wonderful it smelled in that garden? There's not one mention of smell. What kind of garden was this? Sounds like, you know, a garden in Brooklyn.
It was a forbidden tree, so... God didn't want to make it more appealing to them.
It's a garden. I forget that tree, Marcia. What about every other tree in the garden? It was fragrant. It had to be. It's a garden. It's got every possible fruit tree. It's got every possible everything. But the Torah makes no mention of it. Says the Arizal, because the sense of smell was not flawed by the sin. It remained on the higher spiritual level, because it was not used in the sin. That's why the sense of smell is the most spiritual. It never got tainted. Therefore, now let's jump back to our case. Therefore, after Shabbat leaves and that extra soul is leaving, there's a certain level of, we missed out on, So you know what we do? Is we smell. You don't get any physical pleasure from that. If you eat something sweet, you get a physical pleasure. If you hold something, you get a physical. All the other senses, if you would utilize it, you would get a physical pleasure. Smell is not a physical pleasure. Yes, it triggers all of those olfactory stuff. And that, yes, that's true. But on the scale of physicality, you can't touch it. It's not tangible. Yeah, I know the molecules floating around, but that is why you smell spices for Avdallah, because that's giving a little extra oomph to your soul on the loss of what was with it for Shabbat. But here's the question for you. Go ahead, Marcia.
Can it be correlated to the fact that they burned incense in the temple?
Yep, that is why they did it, because That's correct. Even on Yom Kippur, of all the days, right? The highest level of the service was the Kohen Gadol going into the Holy of Holies and burning the spices. It's exactly right. That's correct. Now, let's bring this all back because at some point I got to connect this all together here. The question is asked, do you get that extra soul on Yom Tov? Or is it only for Shabbat? Ah, I know, you never thought of that. That's why they pay me the big bucks. Come on, do you get the extra soul on Yom Tov? And if so, does it leave the same way that it leaves after Shabbat? What do you think?
I think no, because I read somewhere that the holidays, you don't do the Havdalah, you don't do the spices because you don't have to get that extra soul.
Okay, so Robin is trying to cite a good example that would seem to lend a good proof that you don't lose the soul, that extra soul, even if it were there, because when you do Havdalah, by the way, you do Havdalah after the festivals, but you don't incorporate right. spices after. Or
fire. Spices, that's what I meant. Yeah.
But you do some level. You do take a cup of wine and make Havdalah. But why no spices? So Robin's going to cite that as evidence. Your Honor, I cite, I offer exhibit A. Right, Counselor? Right? There's no spices in the Havdalah. See, you, however, Counselor, you're trying to cite that as proof that you didn't have the soul. I'm going to cite it just the opposite. I'm going to say that, you know what? You don't have to use the spices because it's not leaving. You got it, but it's not leaving. Now you say to me, Rabbi, why not? If it leaves after Shabbat, then why won't it leave after Yom Tov?
Ladies, but don't we, like, when we do Havdalah to end a holiday, we do light a candle and we...
No, we don't. No, we don't. Only if it's Saturday night.
But we do just the blessing over the wine.
That's it. Blessing over the wine and the paragraph, the blessing about Havdalah. Hamavdil ben kodesh l'chol ben or l'choshech. That you say, but there's no fire and there's no spice. That's only on a Saturday night, only after Shabbos.
It's yours.
So why? Why wouldn't it leave? Ladies and gentlemen, put your seatbelt on. For the next 3 to 4 minutes, you're going on a ride. Okay. There are times in our life, let me put it differently. There's an expectation that there are some times we've experienced in our life an inspiration that was not through our doing. It popped into your head. It was a gift that just, I don't know. I don't know where it came from. It's called God, but I don't know where it came from. It just popped into my head and this is it. This, oh my God. When I was preparing, I was like, this is what I got to say. And I, okay. Mm-hmm. And then there are other times in your life of where you put in the effort, you worked hard and it produced and you got what you were accomplishing and you earned it. There are two modes, the modality that God interacts with us when it comes to spiritual inspiration. One is called spiritual inspiration from above, and the other is inspiration from below. You have it in both ways. In Kabbalistic literature, they call it arousal from above and arousal from below. And what it means is that there are times where the inspiration is sent from heaven as a gift. That's called from above. But from below is where there were times where it begins down here. Human action activates it, and it's earned. Both are very worthwhile and allows us to grow. Sometimes from a gift that we didn't earn, it just came, or I worked at it and I was fortunate enough to be successful with it. Which do you think represents Shabbat? And which one represents the festival? The one from above corresponds to which?
All right.
Shabbos or Yom Tov?
Shabbos.
Why?
Shabbat.
gift from God.
What, you didn't earn it?
No.
No, you didn't. You didn't do diddly for it. You didn't. It's a fixed thing. It's a gift. God gives it to us. That is an inspiration from above. However, the festivals are different. And I'd like to show you why. When is, you know, we know that every Jewish month has, it's not a perfect number, right? A lunar month has 29 and a fraction days. Well, we don't like to deal with fractions. We didn't like to do it in school. We're certainly not doing it in real life. So what we do basically is that we alternate. 1 month we'll call 29, one we'll call 30. And we'll just basically flip-flop. And there are a few months that can go either way. Okay? Well, who makes the determination as to whether it's the new month now or not? So in the old days, it used to be witnesses would come to the court in Jerusalem and say, hey, we saw the first sliver of the moon, and they would interrogate and make sure that they have the information, right? And then the Jewish court would declare today is Rosh Chodesh. Today's the first, the new month. Now, if they came later in the day, that presented a bit of a problem because the offerings that we brought in the morning were assuming it was not the new month. And I didn't bring the extra offering. On Rosh Chodesh, there's an extra. Well, if they're coming at 4 in the afternoon, that's not going to do me any good. How am I going to tell everybody that today was Rosh Chodesh? Okay, so we'll push it to the next day. You say, okay, that's cool. But think about the ramifications. If, let's just for argument's sake, let's say they came Monday afternoon. Technically speaking, the first day of the new month is Monday, right? And if you fast forward 15 days, you're going to get to the holiday of Pesach, because it's on the 15th of the month. That means starting 2 weeks later on Monday, no chametz, and you sure as heck better eat that matzah. But now, because they delayed it one day, that means the first of the month is not until Tuesday, which means you can eat your chametz on Monday. Got to be finished by Monday night, because Tuesday is Pesach. Now, wait a second. Who gets the right to make that decision? I thought it's the 15th of the month. That's what it is. The answer is we, human beings, made that determination. Can you imagine? We were given the ability to determine when the festivals fall. You see, when it comes to Shabbat, human input is zero. Shabbat is the seventh day, come heck or high water. Man has no input as to when Shabbat is. It is what it is. The festivals are 100% determined by our calculation. Even if in heaven it's wrong, yeah, we made it the day later, that's what it is. Fact. You're eating, if you want to be so righteous, matzah Monday, you get zero mitzvah because it's not Pesach on our calendar. It's not until Tuesday.
David,
you know what I'm saying? Have I lost you or you got this? Looks like I lost you. Okay. Let's try it one more time, very quickly. There is no human input determining when Shabbos comes. It is fixed thing on the calendar. There's nothing I can do to change that. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. It is what it is. The festivals are not that way. The festivals are determined as to when we determine when is the beginning of the month. And since there's wiggle room, because it depends on when the witnesses would come, that means it, the determination as to when in reality the festival will begin is determined by us, human interaction, human input. Even when we read the blessings in your prayers, when we talk about Shabbos, we say, Baruch atah Hashem Mikadesh HaShabbat. You, blessed are you, God, who sanctifies the Shabbos. On all the other festivals, we don't say that. We say Baruch Ato Hashem Mikadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim. The blessed are you, God, who sanctifies Israel and the festivals. You hear the difference? Shabbos has nothing to do with the Jewish people. It is what it is. The festivals, that's our call. And therefore, Shabbos represents the gift from above that has no human input. And the festivals represent the work we do to bring that inspiration. And therefore, when the soul is ready to leave after Shabbos, it was a gift with no human input. I didn't earn it. It comes when God gives it to me, and it goes when God takes it. But the festivals, I made the determination as to when it starts because of when I declared the new month. That extra soul that is there, I earned. I put in the effort. I prepared all of it. And therefore, it stays with me. You merit to keep it longer. The extra soul of Shabbos is essentially a gift. Person didn't earn the right to keep it. But the festivals, you earned it. You put in the time. You put in the scholarly work. You get to hold on to that longer. That's the third understanding, and we'll just leave it at that. All right, one last thing. Sorry. Got to do it. We know that both Shabbos and the festivals is a meeting between God and the Jewish people, right? We can agree on that, right? Clear your head. Take a 2-second breather, deep breath. Nobody was talking about, but here's a new thing. Okay, great. Both Shabbos and festivals are occasions of meeting Jewish people with God. The question is, who's visiting whom? Who's going to whom? Are we going to God, or is God coming to us? We're having a meeting and God doesn't do Zoom. So how's this working? Who's visiting whom? Arlene, tell me, who's visiting whom?
I think it's both. I think that God visits us and we visit in our hearts.
But who came to whom? Did God come to your house? Or did
God's
you go
always,
to his?
God's always here.
God is always here. That's true. Well, in your house for sure.
Sometimes.
The great Rav Soloveitchik wanted to suggest, and I'll let you go with this. He wanted to suggest that on the festivals, we go visit, we leave our homes to go visit the divine. Isn't that really what the three pilgrimage festivals are representing? We leave our home and we travel up to God's home, the temple. It's in that sense we ascend to appear before God on his terms. On Shabbat, it's different. Shabbat, we don't stand before God in his home. Rather, he descends from heaven and comes to us. Why is this so significant? You all are familiar that on Friday night, we do something called Kabbalat Shabbat. We welcome in the Shabbos. The Shabbos queen is coming to visit. We're going to welcome her. Really? When's the last time you did Kabbalat Yom Tov? You didn't. There's no such thing. We don't sing the same songs. We don't welcome in the Yom Tov queen. We only talk about the Shabbos queen coming to visit. Yeah.
We bring her in with our hands when we do light the candles.
On Shabbos, not Yom Tov.
On Shabbos, yes.
That's correct. That's why there's a concept of Kabbalah. Kabbalah, like the word Kabbalah means to receive. That's what the word means. Everybody always translates it as mysticism. Yeah, that's the colloquial. But the word Kabbalah means this, that which is received. It's the deeper traditions. So Kabbalat Shabbat means welcoming in the Shabbos, right? On Shabbos, the Shabbos queen enters the world of mankind. On Yom Tov, it's the other way around. Man leaves his regular place and puts himself into the realm of God. Maybe that's why we sing Shalom Aleichem on Friday night. Because we're saying welcome to our home. Shalom Aleichem. Great to have you, God, and the angels who come to visit. Thank you for coming and gracing us. You don't sing Shalom Aleichem for Yom Tov. You only do it for Shabbat. This Rav Soloveitchik wanted to suggest, again, another difference of the essential nature of what Shabbos is and what Yom Tov is. If I blew you away, I apologize. But if at least walk away with one thing, we'll bring it full circle. When the Torah teaches us about Shabbos and teaches us about the festivals, they work together. It's not one and two. Maybe it's 1A and 1B, but either because one represents the idea about God as a creator and the other represents God as involved and the two work together, or like the Meshech Chachma suggested that Shabbos is more a sense of working your relationship between you and God and Yom Tov, the festivals are between nurturing the relationship between you and your fellow, or because there's a concept of inspiration from above, which is Shabbos, which is a gift, or Yom Tov, which is something that I put in the time, I put in the effort, I had input, that's inspiration from below, both working together. Or even like this last understanding from Rav Soloveitchik of where Shabbos comes to us, but Yom Tov, we go visit God. It's a give and a take. It's a relationship that really requires all aspects of it. You come to my house, I come to yours. I work on my relationship with God, I work on my relationship with my fellow. The Shabbos Yom Tov, while they work in different modalities and essential natures are different, they're both working with the same objective of nurturing the relationship in totality. That's really, the two work as 1A, 1B, not one and two. That's really my main point that I wanted to share. Okay? Okay. I'm sure it was overload, apologies, but every now and then. Any questions that I'm able to answer or that you're able to articulate?
Well, is that related to you have to clear your relationship with your fellow man before you can clear your relationship with Hashem?
Like you're talking about like on Yom Kippur, where you have to ask forgiveness. Yeah. It's two parts of one whole. It's two parts of one whole. There's no question. The idea that you have to have...
Bye. They want to say bye.
Sharon, I put you on mute because of the background noise. Sorry. You're right, Randy. It's two parts of one whole. A person who says, I'm only going to focus on my relationship with God and I'm going to blow off my relationship with others, in my book, is dealing with, I won't even say half a Torah, you're making your stuff up. Because there's another part that says you have to work on your relationship with others and vice versa. You can have the nicest, sweetest person in the world who's all about interpersonal relationship, but has no relationship with God. It's like half an etrog. How good is half an etrog? Do you get half a mitzvah? No, you get diddly. It's two parts of one whole. They have to work together.
It's like celebrating Shabbos and celebrating Yom Tov.
Exactly the point. The two work together. The observance of Shabbos and the observance of the holidays. Both essential nature. Both essential parts.
I have a two-part question regarding Shabbat. One is the calendar and the days are based on a lunar cycle. So the first question is, when I hear the beginning of Shabbat or the beginning of a festival, I always hear sunset. Why is it not when the moon arises?
And so that's a great question. While the calendar is based on a lunar cycle, the fact of the matter is that God created the day that follows the sun. For example, on the first day of creation, what does it say? He created whatever it was. And then the end part says, Vayihi erev vayihi bokeh. It was evening and it was morning day one. So the definition of day is from evening through day, through morning. Okay. That's the Torah's definition. God says, I want you to calculate a day based on that cycle. But as far as how you're calculating the yearly cycle or the monthly cycle, that's based on the moon.
The second part is, How did it end up being a Friday sunset? Why not Wednesday sunset? How did it end up being Friday sunset?
Because it was the seventh day. 6 days, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it's sunset of the day six leading into number seven. That's Shabbos.
But who determined that the seventh day was Saturday and not Wednesday?
Whatever order you want to call it. Sunday is day one. It could have been called Wednesday. It could be the order could have been Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Monday, Friday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. It could have been. Whatever names we made up, that's fine. But in the Torah, there is no such thing as a name of a day. It's day one, day two, day three. There's no such thing as Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
Those are named for Greek things, right? Tuesday is...
But also...
What?
Except for in the Torah portion, except for Yom Kippur, where it says from evening to evening, the rest of the Torah portion kind of implies that it's that holiday started sunrise, not
at all. Sunset. Not at all. You're taking the verse out of context where it says what you do from evening to evening is what you need to fast because other fast days start at sunrise. But Yom Kippur, I need you to do the service from evening to evening, not from morning to evening. But every day on the Jewish calendar begins at night. That's taken straight out of chapter one from the Torah. Robin.
This goes away from that, but back to the extra soul on the festivals. I'm trying to still get that. It's because you work for it, so you're working harder. So you get to keep the extra soul longer than when it's given to you from Shabbat. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Want to make sure. It's been
a lot. Exactly. Exactly. All right. I've held you hostage long enough. All right. I'll see you guys. Have a great Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let it percolate a little bit.
Yashikoh.